Welcome to American Patchwork and Quilting Radio, your one stop for creative inspiration. We have a terrific hour of ideas and tips for you today, so let's get to it. Here's your host, Pat Sloan.
Welcome to American Patchwork and Quilting Radio. I'm your host, Pat Sloan. Today, my first guest is has a love of Liberty Fabrics, Liberty of London. Do you collect them? I think a lot of us have like a secret stash, maybe a big secret stash of Liberty London fabrics. I'm really excited to have her come on and talk about her new book called Liberty Love. This book has like 25 projects in it. It's from C&T. And it's going to be really, really exciting. The lady who wrote this book is author Alexa Abeg, who is here right now to tell us everything she knows. So welcome to the show.
Thank you, Pat. It's good to be here.
This is so exciting. Your design business is called Green Bee Studio. That's such a cute name.
Thank you so much.
So how did you become sort of in love with Liberty of London fabrics?
You know, my mom is an extremely talented sewer, and as a child, she sewed up beautiful dresses and blouses and different things with it, and so I saw it, you know, around and wore it as a child, and I think that really sparked the interest. Just the style of the prints and the way that they're printed, the colors just sink into the fabric like watercolors, and they just have fascinated me since then. Since I was a kid.
Well, you know, I didn't realize I sewed clothing as a teenager, and I didn't really discover Liberty of London until I became a quilter. I really didn't know about it.
Really?
Yeah, I know. And I sewed in Europe, so I lived in Europe, so I don't know if that made a big difference. But my stepmom is British, and
she has
a Liberty of London fabric pot holder.
Oh, sweet.
Yeah, from forever. So do you still have scraps from your clothing?
Oh, I do, for sure. And actually, I still have this blouse that I wore first and second grade out of the Wiltshire print, which is a sweet little print with a little kind of a berry shape, and I still have that blouse tucked away in a little box thinking one day I'll cut it up and sew it into a quilt, but I don't know if I'll ever have the gumption to do it.
So tell me a little bit. To me, the fabric from Liberty of London, their traditional fabric, is a different sort of hand to it, a feel, a texture, a drape.
It is, definitely. Their traditional fabric, you know, they have their new line that's in a quilting weight, but their traditional fabric is what they call a Tana lawn, and it's a very, very fine cotton that they use to make the fabric, and it also has a very high thread count. So the drape is almost like a crisp, lightweight silk instead of just a cotton. I mean, the hand is just gorgeous. I think most of us, anytime, you know, we first have seen Liberty, you touch it and are just in love because it's so soft and it's light as air. So yeah, the hand is definitely a little bit different.
And we like to pet it.
Yes. I'm sure we all walk through the fabric stores with our arms outstretched, touching every single bolt along the way.
Yes, absolutely. So now, because of that difference, a little bit difference weight and hand to it. Are there things we need to know about using it in a quilt and then mixing it? Because you mix regular quilting weight cottons with the Tana lawn Liberty of London.
I do. Yes, definitely. It's very easy to do. And, you just kind of have to consider what you're going to make. You know, when we're talking about quilts, really, there's not a lot of consideration other than pre-washing because it will shrink at a different rate than the quilting cotton. So that's something to think about. Maybe switching to a little bit finer and sharper needle size. So going from, you know, maybe most people use a universal, you could go to a sharp needle instead, and to like a 70-10 size instead of maybe the average 11 or 12. But other than that, as far as quilting, it's so easy to combine it with your regular average quilting weight cotton. And that, And in addition, you can combine the cotton voile that's very, very popular right now, and I think gaining popularity. That combines so, so beautifully with the Liberty Lawn because the weights are very similar.
Mm. And how about hand quilting? How do people hand quilt through the Tana Lawn?
Definitely. And it's not resistant. You know, sometimes the teaks, which are a little bit tighter weave, can have that little bit of resistance. But the Tana Lawn, you can stitch through just beautifully. There's actually a quilt, in my book that's a sweet 16 patch baby quilt that I hand quilted, with pearl cotton. And it was very, very simple. So.
Now, tell me just really briefly, they have kept, the designs have a name, rather than like in quilting fabric, we do, like when I have a line of fabric, it has a name, Eat Your Fruits and Veggies. The whole line is called that. Here, it's like the designs have a name, and they stay forever.
Yes, what Liberty does, their art studio releases what they call their classic lines, which come back season after season, maybe different colorations here and there, but are long-lasting. And then they also have their seasonal line. And the seasonal line tends to be much more fashion-forward. You'll find a lot more novelty prints and things that really break the mold. They do a lot of guest artists with their seasonal collection. So, yes, it is a little bit different. And each individual print is named, yeah.
Because even in your book, you show one of the prints that has like a tiger face in the in the flowers.
It's Scotty's like, wow. Tiger. Yes, definitely. Yeah. It's interesting just how unique, and this is how they've been doing it for decades. So that tradition definitely holds true for them.
Now, I think you actually have a sewing studio. Your business, part of your business, is a sewing studio. Tell me a little bit about that first before we talk about the book again.
Yes, I have a school and studio in Nashville called Stitch, and I teach classes on average 3 days a week at my studio, and it's a cozy little spot in a college neighborhood, and I'm upstairs in an old house, so I kind of have like a great view, and I see trees outside and people walking their dogs, and I have a lot of fun. I teach quilting, and one of my most popular classes is Sewing 101, which is just the ultimate basics. I have a lot of fun teaching. It's definitely one of my passions, and I feel like it helps to make me a better writer, and hopefully a better pattern writer too. So,
I wanted to tie that in so that people could see this is your first book that you've authored, and it really, I think your background in teaching and having your own studio really shows here, because your directions are wonderful.
Thank you so much. I appreciate that. I really remember what it was like as a beginning sewer and all of the challenges that exist there. So I just, I want to try and break those down a little bit. So I appreciate that.
Now you have all types of projects. I mean, 25 projects is a lot of projects. You have large projects, little projects. Just tell me, what it was one of your favorite quilting projects that you did for the book?
Well, I think one of my favorites was the medallion quilt, the Marcel medallion quilt that's in the book. It was something that was a challenge to create and draft, and I had always wanted to stitch up a medallion quilt. I think it's something that really has roots in great tradition, and something that I don't feel like you see a ton of. So that was definitely one of my favorites, only because it was kind of a challenge, which is always fun.
And that particular one does a mix of fabrics.
It is. It's very, very scrappy. So there's bits of Liberty. There's all different kinds of Japanese prints. There's some Denise Schmidt and Moda lines. Yeah, it's all mixed up.
Now, you come from a garment-making background. I come from a garment-making background. I mean, I learned to sew by making clothing. You know, I always tell people I didn't do a very good job at it, but that's how I learned. And so your book, the Liberty of London fabrics are beautiful in clothing, and you have clothing patterns in your book.
I do. There's hopefully a little something for everyone. There's a man's shirt and then a matching little boy's shirt. There's a women's dress and a little girl's dress. It was really, really fun to bring this in because I think, you know, I tried to think about some really classic styles that will stay around. You know, if you're going to splurge on Liberty, you want it to be for something that you're going to love forever. So I tried to pick really simple silhouettes and introduce some things that might be, you know, maybe a little bit challenging for a beginning sewer, but definitely manageable to get through. So.
Yeah, I like that there's the little girl's dress. Little pearl dress is adorable. Everybody has a little girl they can make a dress for and try it out.
Definitely. And it's very straightforward sewing. So
tell me here, before we end, your business is a family business. You have work with your husband and your mother, too.
I do. Like most things in my world, it just, you know, becomes a family thing. So my husband is an illustrator and artist, and he designs fabric. He has his first collection out right now called Micromod with Cloud9 Fabrics. It's an organic line. Beautiful, awesome. Beautiful prints and really fun to work with and modern. And then my mom, Michelle Abegg, also works with Green Bee, designing some of the patterns that we put out, and we collaborate all of the time. And my sisters also are totally my sounding board, so I appreciate them as well.
That's fabulous. And you also want to be sure people know you're a contributing author to the American Patchwork and Quilting family of magazines. And if you go to allpeoplequilt.com and you just put in ABEGG, Alexa's last name, Abegg, you'll find her really adorable spool and sewing machine quilt.
Yes, that's right. That's right.
And also, they can visit you at alexaabegg.com and find out all your info.
Yep.
So this has been wonderful. Thanks for coming on and teaching us a lot about Liberty of London today.
Thank you so much for having me, Pat. I appreciate it.
This is American Patchwork and Quilting Radio. We're going to take a little break and we'll be right back.
Win free stuff! Find out about our newest online sweepstakes and contests and how you can enter at allpeoplequilt.com/promos.
The Fall 2012 Moda Fabrics Fashion Show is about to start. First up, the exotic fabrics of Cusco by Kate Spain and Chant, with rich fuchsia, indigo, and orchid. Do you hear that? It's the ocean breezes coming from the Seascapes collection by Dev Strain. It's no mystery. You'll love the Get a Clue with Nancy Drew line. Hearts and flowers and houndstooth, oh my. Kissing Booth by Basic Gray brings romance to the runway. Stay tuned for more runway reporting. Visit your local quilt shop to see these fashionable lines and more from Moda Fabrics.
Hi, I'm Jennifer Keltner, Executive Editor of American Patchwork and Quilting, and I'd like to invite you to join me in making a pillowcase and making a difference. It's easy. Make and donate pillowcases in your local community. Use your favorite pattern or choose from one of the free patterns at allpeoplequilt.com. Whether you sew pillowcases with a group or by yourself, you can help someone less fortunate. You could donate them to a women's shelter, boys or girls club, homeless shelter, veterans home, or any other organization you know of in need. Once you donate the pillowcases, log on to allpeoplequilt.com. Click on the box in the upper right-hand corner for the 1 million pillowcase challenge and enter the number of pillowcases you created to our national tally. We know quilting changes everything, and we're out to show the world just how much quilters care. Please join the American Patchwork and Quilting 1 Million Pillowcase Challenge. We're counting on you.
See what other quilters are up to on the American Patchwork and Quilting page on Facebook. Simply go to facebook.com and search for APQ Magazine.
Welcome back to American Patchwork and Quilting Radio. I'm your host, Pat Sloan. Have you always wanted to design your own quilt? You know, I think a lot of people, you know, they take a project and they you know, make changes to it, make it their own. But, you know, sometimes you have something in your head that you want to try. Maybe you saw some blocks, but you like to combine them. Well, there's lots of ways to design your own quilt. And I asked author, designer Kimberly Imo to come back on today to the show and talk a little bit about designing, and particularly using one of the programs that's very popular called Electric Quilt. She's going to tell us about that. And we're going to talk about, you know, just other ways you can design. So thanks for coming back, Kimberly.
Thanks for having me, Pat. I'm so happy to be here.
So when did you design your first original quilt? I mean, can you actually remember when you did that?
I actually can. It was back in 1992, shortly after I had started quilting. I was working part-time at a quilt shop, and they had EQ3 on the shelf. And because I was a graphic designer for a trade association at that time, it was a pretty easy sell for me to want to try to do my own quilts on the computer, because I was already doing a lot of graphic work on the computer anyway. So it was a really easy transition. It's an easy interface, and I just kind of took to it like a duck to water. So that's when I got started. It really was back in 1992, and I think I even still have some of those files on my hard drive somewhere.
You know, I think for me, I did not go directly to computer, even though my background is computer science. I was not a graphic artist. I did programming with words, which is totally different than drawing.
It is different.
Yeah, way, way different. So my stuff was all done on paper, you know, graph paper.
Yeah.
Very, very old-fashioned. until I went into business, and it was then that I used the, you know, computer software. You know, so why do you find, you know, when you go out and teach, Kimberly, I'm sure that at some point you talk about designing, because, you know, it always comes up. You know, are a lot of people you're finding having fun with designing their own quilts?
Yeah, and to be honest with you, I'd say 90% of the quilters really have that design diva deep down inside of them, just waiting to come out. They love to make quilts that they see in magazines and books. But I think just about everybody wants to personalize it in their own way and put a twist on it and make it their own. So I think designing is a real natural progression in your quilt making journey. You can, you know, recreate patterns over and over, but eventually everyone starts to kind of want to do their own thing. And that's where the design software can come in and make those visions in their mind become a reality, not only on the computer screen, but in fabric as well.
Right. You know, with a program like Electric Quilt, so we'll talk about that one because it's very popular. It has a really great website, electricquilt.com. So people, there are other softwares out there like Quilt Pro, and I happen to use software not made for the quilt industry. So there's a lot of that, like, you know, Adobe. I know people who actually do use spreadsheets.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, I can't even imagine that, but they actually design.
It's hard to me, but
yeah, they design in a spreadsheet, and
right, or even in CorelDRAW or something.
Yeah, yeah,
there are like, other programs out there that lend themselves to it. But
I think if you've never designed, Electric Quilt is great because it steps you through everything. It's pretty simple, isn't it?
It is, and it's really got a very user-friendly interface. So it's really geared towards people who may think that they're not real computer savvy, but especially now version 7, EQ7, it is the most user-friendly quilt software I've seen and I use, and I find it harder to design without it, without computer software than with it. It's just so easy with the point of your mouse and a click. You can choose from thousands of blocks to different kinds of styles. There are so many options. People tend to get overwhelmed, and I've even been out when I'm teaching, I'll hear people say, well, I have it, but it's still in the box. And I'm like, oh, you got to get it out, load it on your computer and use it. It's really not as intimidating as some people might think because it is so easy to use, and you just, with a simple click, you can. They even have quilt designs already in there that you can personalize. Mm-hmm. And, of course, there's lots of tutorials that are built in that will help you learn the software.
So do you find that there's, like, one thing, because you've talked probably more about designing with this product than I have. Is there one thing you tell people that they should try first, you know, for those people who still have it in the box or got it for Christmas maybe, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. Walk through the tutorials. Even doing one or two of the tutorials will get them so, it takes the fear out of it once they can just see. And they're quick and easy to do the little tutorials that come with it. And then all you would need to do is go in and click on quilt and choose new quilt. And there's, you know, tons of options there. But if you want just a basic horizontally set, quilt, it'll just open right up, and then you go into the block library, and there's, you know, just thousands of blocks. Mm-hmm. Pick one or two, and you can search for them by name. So if you wanted a log cabin, or you wanted a sawtooth star, or Dresden plate, you know, any of those block names that you're familiar with, just type those in. It will come up with, like, up to 50 different results. You just click on the one you want and get started. And then it's very, very easy to go from there to personalize it to make it the size you want. Do you want a block size that's 12 inches, or do you want to work with 6-inch blocks? It's very, very easy to start small, start simply, and then add a few things like, oh, let's put sashing in. Let's try a different border. Do we want mitered borders, or do we want just, you know, horizontally set borders, you know, straight blocked borders? And then the really great thing is, no matter what you've put in for the parameters, it will figure the yardage for you. And I find that immensely helpful.
Yeah, I was just going to ask you. I was pretty sure that it did that.
That is one of the greatest features, I think, because, you know, it will tell you exactly once you've got the quilt the way you want it and the size that you want it. And, of course, there's tons of fabrics that you can choose, or you can just design. Like, believe it or not, when I'm designing, I design in grayscale. I take all the fabrics out originally, and I design with just shades of black, white, and gray. If you can get a quilt design on your computer to look great in grayscale, when you're just working with values, then no matter what fabrics you plug into those values, as long as they match the value, your quilt will look beautiful.
And speaking of having fabrics in there, it has a wonderful little component called stash.
Yes. Now, this is something I must confess. I have every stash that they've ever created, and it's a lot. Stash is a little add-on software program that they come out with every, I believe, every shoulder season, so in the spring and in the fall, and it features all the new fabrics, or many, many, many of the new fabrics from just about every fabric manufacturer out there. And so you can actually go in and find the line of fabric that's in your quilt shop right now and literally plug those fabrics into your quilt design to see how it's going to look. And then it will tell you how much of that fabric you need to buy. So
yay!
It's really, really a money saver, because you can really road test the design, road test the fabrics before you ever put a rotary cutter to it.
Yeah. And do they have to purchase Stash, or does it,
yes,
is it a
download? Yes, you do. It's a nominal fee. It's very inexpensive.
Okay.
But here's something else great. Some of the manufacturers, and right now I can think of Moda right off the top of my head, they provide free on their website JPEG files, or little files you can download for free, import into EQ, and they have all their fabrics with that little picture already taken, and this is free. So if you want to use Moda Fabrics, you just go to their website, download those little files, and you can create quilts with those current fabrics or even older fabrics. If you have some in your stash, I'll bet you can go to the Moda website and find those fabrics in their archives and still create, so you can use the fabrics you've got in your stash.
Right, and that's on the fabric page at their at Moda, UnitedNotions.com. So then you get the fabric page, and then it has by line, and it has little options of, you know, and that, and one of them is all those little JPEGs. So, Kimberly, your site is Kimberly Imo, EINMO.com. So people see, you know, learn about where what you're doing and catch up. So tell me, you know, people who can't, you know, chat with you in person about all these things. You actually have some online classes.
Yes, I do. I have online classes on Craftsy.com. am real excited about that. I have a Jelly Roll Magic or Magical Jelly Roll quilts on Craftsy, and a brand new one getting ready to launch later this month in January called Chain of Stars Mystery Quilt.
Yay!
And all of these were designed in EQ, believe it or not.
Exciting! Exciting! And you're also doing some teaching in Kentucky, is that right?
That's right. I'll be at the AQS show in Paducah. I will also be teaching. I'm really excited to be teaching a retreat at the National Quilt Museum this coming September. It's going to be a three-day workshop. I'm going to be teaching every single trick in the book to use with pre-cuts and to create a gorgeous modern sampler quilt that you can easily take the tips and techniques and create your own. Again, it's going to be featuring a lot of design work, but things that we can do with pre-cuts and, you know, take a layer cake and a jelly roll and one background fabric, and the possibilities are endless.
So, and for that, is that a multiple day?
Yes, three days.
Oh, 3 days.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
I think it's September 12th through the 14th.
Yeah. Wow. How fun.
I've never taught there before. I'm very excited about that. Very honored to be asked.
Oh, yeah. And then in the museum. I mean, were the classes in the museum?
I believe how cool is that? Yeah, I know. That is like a dream retreat workshop. I mean, I just think that would be so much fun to come and spend that kind of time with a group of people and really get to know them a little bit more than when you're just taking a day class, you know, become friends and have dinner at night and socialize. It's going to be fun.
Kimberly, this has been wonderful to have you on to talk about designing. Thank you.
Oh, thank you. I hope people won't be intimidated by it and get out there and try it. It's really a lot of fun, and you can make, you know, so many more quilts on the computer than you'll ever have time to actually sew. But
this
it is a lot
true.
Of fun.
Thanks, Kimberly.
Thanks so much. I really appreciate it.
This is American Patchwork and Quilting Radio. We'll be right back after the break.
Looking for fresh, simple, and fun projects and ideas? Check out the current issue of Quilts & More magazine at your local quilt shop or on newsstands.
Welcome back to the Fall 2012 Moda Fabrics Fashion Show. These collections are hot, hot, hot. Fig Tree is back with a new collection called Tapestry, which weaves together Greek and Moroccan influences for a beautiful result. We're mad for the plaids in the We Woven's Brights collection. Next, pull up an Adirondack chair and enjoy the Ocean View by Paul Brent. And finally, Three Sisters delivers a delicious helping of double chocolat with scrumptious colors of dark chocolate, cherry, caramel, and vanilla bean. Stay tuned for more runway reporting. Visit your local quilt shop to see these fashionable lines and more from Moda Fabrics.
Here's a special offer just for radio listeners. Get 2 full years of American Patchwork and Quilting delivered right to your door for less than half the cost on the newsstand. You won't miss an issue that's packed with never-before-seen projects from top designers, complete materials lists for all projects, and easy-to-use pull-out patterns and quilting diagrams. Subscribe today online, and you'll also get a free downloadable pattern. Check it out. Go to allpeoplequilt.com.
Get quilting tips and instructions for web-exclusive projects free every week, delivered to your inbox. Sign up today for your free weekly e-newsletter at allpeoplequilt.com.
Welcome back to American Patchwork and Quilting Radio. I am your host, Pat Sloan. Now, I do have to get that EQ out and play. Every time I talk about it, I need to get it out and play. It is so much fun. So now I have Leah Day back, and it is time once again this month for our chat about machine quilting. All through 2013, we are having a chat once a month with Leah, and she's going to be talking with me about different segments of free motion quilting on your home machine, so that hopefully you are going to be learning a tremendous amount of tips and will be trying and using them every day. So, Leah, thanks for being here.
Oh, thank you, Pat, for having me.
We're going to talk about machines today.
One of my favorite topics.
Yes, yes, yes. You know, what kind of machine did you learn? You're a little bit younger than me. What kind of machine did you learn to sew on?
I learned to sew on a very old Singer. I don't even know the model number. It was something that was handed down to my family and came into our house. I think I was 8 or 9. And I remember waking up on a Sunday morning and there was this machine in this old cabinet that had been dropped off by some relative and, yeah, kind of that mysterious circumstance. And it was so confusing because it was one of those machines where, nothing was really explicit in how to use it. You know, there was no guides, there was no you didn't understand it. You pushed a button or something like that. And we didn't have the manual for it. Mm. So I had no idea even how to do a zigzag stitch on this machine for at least 10 years. Mm-hmm. So all we did was straight stitch and played with it and wore it out quite effectively. But that was my starting machine.
Yeah, I also had an old machine. Somehow, when we went to Europe to live, when I was young, my mother brought the machine. My mother doesn't like to sew, and she sewed as little as humanly possible, but she had this machine. So she brought it along. It had a cabinet and a lid and a knee lift. So, you know, you made it run by hitting the knee lift. That didn't do the needle like machines do now. That actually was the presser foot. And so, I used that for a very short time, then took ninth grade home ec, where we had sewing, and I was like crazy, crazy in love. So my mother decided that I needed another machine. I had the best mother in the world. So mom went and bought me a Genie, and Genies were really cool because they had orange flower graphics on them. Like, this was the 70s, so think pop art, and I saw a Genie in a class last year and I about died. I had took all kinds of pictures of it. And that was what I had. And as I went along in years, I've had all kinds of different machines, including, my mother said I went to college in the States. She had to buy me another machine. She had to because
she had to.
Yeah, she had to. She goes, well, you had to have a machine to go to college. I'm like, oh, yeah,
okay.
She does.
Sure, Mom. Go ahead and buy me one if that's what you want to do.
So the Genie had to stay in Europe because it was on European currency. So what are you using now? What kind of machines? I have more than one.
Yeah, I have three machines set up right this second. I have a Janome Horizon 7700. That's my main quilting machine, my free motion quilting machine. And it pretty much stays, you know, set up for that. It, you know, occasionally I'll bind on that machine, but I really don't piece on it. For piecing, I like my Berninas. I have two. I have a Bernina Activa 210, kind of like their bottom-of-the-line Activa model a couple years ago. I think it's been replaced by the E-Series now. Mm-hmm. But I love piecing on a Bernina because they have that really awesome quarter-inch patchwork foot. It's just so perfectly designed. I've never found another foot that really pieces as well as that foot. Mm-hmm. And then my last machine that I have set up is an old Janome 1230, and it was Bernina 1230, and it was one of those ones when I first started getting their feet wet with electronics and computerization, and I found this one through a friend here locally, and she was selling it for like $1,000. I was like, oh, this is so mine. But those machines are really worth their weight in gold.
Right. Yeah, the people love their older machines. You know, some of them were really made quite well. They just sort of workhorses. They go forever.
Yeah.
Yeah, I have a couple also. I sew on a Bernina 440 and a Janome Horizon 12,000, which I'm doing my free motion quilting on now because it has a 12-inch throat. So
nice.
It has some other spiffy little features that I can unplug the foot pedal and make it run. So I just move my hands and stuff like that. So I love, love, love that. But I only have one machine set up at a time. I don't have quite the room that you do.
Well, you know, I figure you can stick a cabinet in any corner, right?
Yeah, that's true.
So, I don't have that much space, but I've managed to, like, stick. I use the Arrow sewing cabinets, the Gidget 2 tables, mm-hmm. and they're small. They're only about, 3 feet by about 18 inches, and I just kind of stick them against a wall anywhere I can. So I don't have a ton of room. Like, my piecing machines just are in one of those. Yeah. It's the quilting machine that you really need a little bit of more space around so you have room for the quilt. So that one I have set up with some IKEA tables around it and stuff, and that really works out really well.
Let's talk a little bit about machines that, you know, we people own right now. Because one of the things I found, Leah, is when I first wanted to first started quilting, I wanted to quilt my own quilts because, I mean, not that I needed to, but I knew I was going to make a lot of them. So I didn't want to send them all to somebody else. You know, I knew I said, I need to master this. So I was relentless. And I had a very old, cheapy little machine, and I took class after class after class and couldn't figure out why my machine quilting, my free motion quilting was crap, even though, you know, I was like trying so hard. And eventually I learned that it was the foot. That yep. inexpensive machine didn't come with a foot that was proper to do the work. It just was the wrong tool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. And even, you know, let's say you go to Walmart and you pick your stuff up, you know, Brother or Singer, something straight off the shelf, $100. It's not going to come with a darning foot for free motion. It's not going to come with a walking foot if you're wanting to just machine quilt with a walking foot. You're going to need to find that foot separate. And you need to really do some research online or go to a dealer and talk to them and see if your machine is fits a universal, it's called a universal high shank or a low shank foot. And if it fits either of those, you know, most of those more inexpensive machines are going to fit a low shank, I'd say, across the board. They're generally going to fit that size. And so once you know that information, then you can go and find yourself a low shank darning foot and a low shank walking foot, and kind of pad out your machine with those feet. Now, straight out of the package, that universal darning foot is not very well designed. And so I actually, whenever I start my classes, anytime I'm in person, I always say, well, we're going to get started in class, and I just want to throw you on your machines, but halfway through the class, I bet you anything, y'all are all going to want me to break your feet. And they kind of give me funny looks, but literally I go around with a pair of pliers and a pair of clippers and break the feet open. So I break open the base of the foot so it becomes an open toe.
Mm-hmm.
And that way you can see the needle more clearly and you can get your thread in there a lot easier. You don't have to hop around that center circle that the foot forms. Mm-hmm. And then I also bend back that top bar. If you've ever seen a darning foot, it has this top bar that kind of bounces, causes the foot to bounce. I bend that back and put a rubber band on the foot instead. And you can find a video on me breaking a foot on my website, daystyledesigns.com, and you can see exactly how this works. But basically, it stops the foot from hopping and allows you to adjust it to the right height so you can free motion quilt, and it'll be at that right height where it skims the surface of the quilt, not too high, not too low, not squishing, and not hopping up and down like a jackhammer. It's so difficult to see what you're doing when your foot's jumping around like that.
And you know, another thing that I when I was watching your class on Craftsy, I liked how you just explained how it worked for you for things and how, you know, you talk about, you know, just trying it, see if it also works for you, you know, for the person watching. But one of the things you read a lot about in free motion quilting, and I've free motion quilted probably 20 years now, is that, you know, people will write, take your stitch length to zero.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I never really thought it made any difference at all to me to do that. But you feel that you test things a lot more than I do because that's sort of your primary business. But you feel that you do see a difference.
Well, let me be honest about that. I can be honest with
not.
You, Pat, right? okay, so the whole stitch length issue really stems from the fact that I tell people not to drop their feed dog. So the number one thing is I say leave your feed dogs up and see what happens. Because those feed dogs, especially if your foot is at the right height, then it's not squishing the quilt against those feed dogs. It doesn't matter where they're at. And most machines, not all of them, mind you, but most machines work better when the feed dogs are engaged, doing what they do normally, feeding back and forth, doing their thing, because that's how machines are designed. They're designed to have good timing. They're designed to have good tension if those feed dogs are working. When you drop them, you're pretty much taking off a core mechanic of the machine. And it can really wreak havoc with your tension, with your stitch quality. So that's the number one thing. I'm already saying, kind of breaking the rules, saying, leave your feed dogs up. Now, that freaks out so many quilters. I mean, it really scares them so badly that they're like, okay, well, the feed dogs are still moving. What do I do? And so the typical response is, say, okay, well, just drop your stitch length down to zero. They'll move back and forth or up and down a little bit, but they're not actually feeding the fabric forward. Well, the fact is, right now, I'm using my Janome free motion quilting with it up at 1.0. You know, 1 millimeter stitch, because I'm finding that I need a little bit of resistance provided by those feed dugs just for what I'm working on right this second. Half the time I get on machine, I turn it on, and I forget to adjust that, you know, that dial, that knob. I just forget. And has the sky fallen around my head? No. It's one of those things where if you forget about it, it totally doesn't matter. Pay attention to what works and what doesn't. Get on your machine and play with it. And understand that you're not going to break your machine. It's designed to work with the feed dugs up. So if anything, you're more likely to break it with the feed dugs down.
Also use the silicone sheets, which helps.
Yeah, I do. I do cover my feed dogs completely with a Supreme slider, a Queen Supreme slider, and that's like a Teflon sheet, makes the quilt easier to move. Now, that is covering the feed dogs, and the number two question I get is, well, if my feed dogs are moving underneath it, isn't that going to, like, get chewed up and fed into my machine and mess up my machine that way? And I've been working on the same Queen Supreme for about a year and a half now, and it's chewed on a little bit. I mean, of course, it's, you know, the feed dugs are sharp little teeth, and they're moving underneath it. It's chewed on a little bit, but it's not damaged the machine in any way. And, you know, the slider's still working fine after a year and a half. I'm happy with it.
Oh, Leah, this has been wonderful. Lots of great information. We could go on for days, couldn't we? You're going to come back next month, and we're going to talk about another topic. And in the meantime, people can come hang out with you at daystyledesigns.com, where they can go to your blog, your online classes, all your other stuff. So thanks so much, and I'll see you next month.
Thank you, Pat.
This is Pat Sloan with American Patchwork and Quilting Radio. We're going to take a little break, and we'll be right back.
Ready for a new project? Choose from hundreds of free patterns in the Projects and Ideas section of our website, allpeoplequilt.com.
We're back at the Fall 2012 Moda Fabrics Fashion Show. It's a great show, folks. Don't forget to mind your P's and Q's with Applejack, an alphabet-themed collection by Tim and Beck. Next, we're taking a journey to a whimsical land filled with cute critters, flowers, and sweet confections with Cherry on Top by Keiki. Hallelujah! The muted reds, navies, and creams of Old Glory Gatherings by Primitive Gatherings brings a nostalgic feel to the runway. And now, something for the men in your life. Trails End combines the beauty of fall leaves and wildlife. Stay tuned for more runway reporting and visit your local quilt shop to see these fashionable lines and more from Moda Fabrics.
Make the most of your sewing machine by watching Machine Minute videos brought to you by Babylock. Learn about popular topics like tension troubles, stitch length, needles, buttonholes, zipper basics, and more. Watch these videos at allpeoplequilt.com/videos.
To find a quilt shop near you that carries the latest issues of Quilt Sampler and Quilts and More magazines, go to allpeoplequilt.com and click on Find a Shop.
Welcome back to American Patchwork and Quilting Radio. I am your host, Pat Sloan. So do you like making triangles, half-square triangles, any kind of triangle? Well, the editors at American Patchwork and Quilting have a little chat about triangle making. Jody Sanders and Jennifer Keltner are on next to dish about triangles. Let's listen.
Triangles. It's one of the things quilters tell us on our Facebook page when we ask what they struggle with for quilting, what they have the most difficulty with. And triangles seem to put people off sometimes when they're looking at patterns, don't you think, Jody?
Yeah, I think it is one of the most difficult things or challenging things, especially for beginning quilters.
Right. But we want people not to overlook triangles because it's definitely a shape, a geometric shape that comes up so often in great quilting patterns. And there are so many fabulous blocks and units you can make with triangle squares and triangles, hourglass blocks, things like that, that it would be a shame to pass up on those patterns just because you have a fear of triangles. So today, what we have is some tips and tricks for sewing triangles together to make it easier for you. And maybe one or two of these will help you to either overcome your fear or to just improve your accuracy when you're sewing together triangles.
One of the first things, or tips even, that I was given when I was first starting to sew and quilt was to use what we call the leader and ender method. And sometimes it's hard to get the points of those little triangles to go through your sewing machine without the needle, without the fabric getting stuck down in there in the feed dog. So what you can do is take a scrap of fabric and send that through before you actually send your pair of triangles through. And it even got to be a point where people decided, you know, let's just don't send a scrap. Let's go ahead and send a pair of maybe rectangles or squares or something like that. And actually we're using those pieces as well in their quilting and not just sending a scrap through.
That's a great idea. It helps avoid, I always used to say my machine would just swallow the point of that triangle down into the hole, and I would end up with these triangle pairs that when I sewed them together looked like the dog had chewed off the tips of the point. So the leader and ender is a great way to resolve that problem. And I think what happens is sometimes we trim our thread so short when we're starting because we don't want to waste any of that precious thread. And so instead of having the tail to hang on to or to get started with, that's what causes that point. So the leader and the ender is a great way to avoid that. There are so many ways you can make triangles. I know for me, I prefer not to cut out the individual triangles. Like you were talking about a technique that works when you have two triangle-shaped pieces that you're sewing together. I like to sew squares together to make triangles. So my favorite method of making triangle squares is to sew on either side of the diagonal line. And if you haven't tried this technique before, I know sometimes with math and quilting, it can get a little scary because you have to add a fraction to something. But really, making two triangle squares out of two squares of fabric is an easy way to get it done. And what the method requires is it has very little waste. So you don't waste as much fabric as sometimes people use two squares and only make one and they lop off that piece and they just toss it away. But using this method, you take two contrasting fabrics. The squares are the same size. And if you know what size your triangle squares are going to be, then you add 7/8 inch to the desired finish size of the triangle. So for example, if you're going to make a 2-inch finished triangle square, you'd cut the two squares for your this method 2 7/8 inch each. So you take those two and seven eighths inch squares and layer them with right sides together, and you would draw a line across the diagonal from point to point and use like a sandpaper board or something beneath your fabric so you don't stretch it when you use that pencil. Is that how you do your lines, Jody? Here?
Yeah, that is. That's a great tip about the sandpaper, because I think sometimes things do slide around either on your table or your cutting mat. So that's a great tip about the sandpaper.
Right. So you don't want to stretch your fabric, but you'll draw that diagonal line. And now there are so many great marking tools, whether it's a pencil or one of the fabric markers that you can use. You don't have to worry if you use a pencil, because this mark will end up in the seam allowance or you're actually going to cut through it later. So you don't have to be as concerned as you normally would about marking your fabric. But just draw a line from one corner to the opposite corner of those two squares, and then sew a 1/4 inch seam on either side of that line. So that line becomes your guide. You'll sew a 1/4 inch to the right side of the line, a 1/4 inch to the left side of the line. Then you'll cut exactly on that drawn line. And what you'll end up with when you press it open then are two identical triangle squares, and you didn't have to cut any triangles before you sew, and you avoid that whole, you know, having edges on the bias before you cut them into two.
And I use that technique a lot. And what I end up doing after I've pressed those open is I also trim the dog ears, what we call the dog ears. They're those little teeny tiny triangles left on the ends. And sometimes it helps to trim those off, because that can reduce the bulk before you're then joining those triangle squares into making your bigger block or your bigger unit.
Absolutely. And it gives you that sort of straight edge, too. While we're talking about that, when you're pressing triangle squares open, it's easy also to distort your triangles at that point and get things sort of out of shape. So use the tip of your iron to press first the two pieces, the two triangles, as they're closed. So you sort of set that seam. And then as you're opening it, put the tip of your iron between those two triangles and flip the triangle square open, and then press that seam flat so you get a nice smooth seam.
Yeah, that really helps when you're then putting your pieces together. You've got a crisp seam there. You know, that's a great tip, I think, if you're doing a scrappy kind of quilt. If you're making a quilt that has a lot of triangle squares that are the same fabrics, another method that you could use is to cut two strips of fabric on the bias. And what you do is take like an 18-inch square, and again, cutting along that diagonal, and then you would cut bias strips the size that you needed. You can cut several bias strips from one big square sew those together, and then you've got multiples of triangle squares that are all the same fabric.
Now, for those of you who are cutting averse, as I sometimes claim to be, I just don't enjoy the cutting process of quilting the most. One thing that has been introduced into the quilting market in the last few years that I really like is die cutting. It's a great way to cut triangles exactly the shape and size that you need them and use that die cutting machine. Often the dies are created so that those dog ears are already cut off for you. The corners match up perfectly and you have precise triangles exactly the way that you need them.
And I think the companies are finding that as quilters are really liking this technique, they're coming out with more and more sizes of dies as well. So you have many more options for that as well.
Absolutely.
Another great technique is using thangles. And thangles is actually a specialty kind of paper that's pre-printed. There are dotted lines and solid lines. And you cut two strips, particular width, and you pin the paper to those two strips of fabric that are right sides together. You sew on the dotted line and then cut on the solid line. And from one strip of thangles, you can get six triangle squares that are all the same. The thangles usually come in packages of maybe 50 or 100, depending on what size package you get. But again, they come in 1.5-inch finish, 2-inch finish, 2.5-inch finish. There's multiple sizes that you can use for thangles. And the paper itself is a specialty kind of paper, so you don't have to worry about a smaller stitch length or adjusting your needle. That paper just comes right off.
That's awesome. Now, I used to say I was allergic to sewing on paper because I don't like to pick that paper out. And, in the old days, you used to do it like with typing paper. You'd draw your own. So that makes a big difference. The other paper I've tried like that that is a little bit different technique is the Star Singles Triangle Paper. And it's created by Spinning Star Design. And it's available at redcrinolinequilts.com because I know designer Paula Barnes really loves this paper for making triangles. And it also comes in a variety of sizes. But it's a little bit different in that the pieces of paper are square and you have directional arrows that point you in the way that you sew. And you sort of sew in a diagonal square twice through it, following those lines, and then you end up with 8 matching triangle squares on some of the smaller papers. It's a great way to make really tiny pieces very accurate.
You know how much I love my tiny pieces.
I love
that product. Another thing that you could use to help you make some triangles, it's called the Angler, and it's a clear plastic template, and it can be used with any sewing machine, which is the real benefit of this. You put it on your sewing machine, there's a template or a key that you adjust your actual needle to, and then the plastic template is taped to the bed of your machine, and there is a line there that you just follow with the corners of the squares or the triangles that you're using, and it's a great product, and again, it can be used on any style or make of sewing machine.
I've used that, and it is a great way for those of you who like to sew fast.
I'm also a proponent of making things bigger and trimming, and I know you and I are a little different on that you don't like to trim down, but I do like to make my squares bigger and trim them, and a product I like to use is called the Block Lock Ruler, and it has a little groove in the diagonal of the ruler, and you just nudge that groove up to the diagonal line, seam line, and it doesn't slip or slide. Sometimes your ruler, you'll kind of slip and slide around with that triangle square, but with the Block Lock Ruler, gets right in that seam line. You can cut easily, and you don't have to worry about your fabric sliding around on you.
Right. I know those are very popular, and I've seen lots of people using them to great benefit. So the last tip I'll share for triangles today is sometimes you're doing it exactly right, it just looks wrong to you. And we often see this when people are using triangles to make flying geese, because when you put it together the correct way before you've put that flying geese unit into your quilt, it looks like the triangles at the top overlap one another, and the point of that big triangle on the flying geese doesn't go all the way to the edge. And sometimes quilters will trim that off mistakenly before they put it in their quilt and think, oh gosh, my point didn't go to the top. I must have done something wrong. Well, the truth is you want that little overlap, because where it overlaps at the top should really be 1/4 inch from the point of the big triangle on your flying geese unit. And when you sew it together into your quilt, that 1/4 inch becomes, guess what, your seam allowance. And then when you're pieced
you've pieced your quilt top together, your points come out perfectly. So don't be fooled if you're sewing flying geese together in triangles and think, well, my points should come to the corner, because at the bottom of the block, you do see both those points with the dark color. But it's just at the top where you think, oh, I missed it by that much. And really, you did it exactly right. So triangles, give it a try. They're a great shape. They show up in terrific quilt patterns. And we hope you've learned something here in this segment to help you do a better job of assembling your triangles with easier and better results that you're happier with.
For more tips, tricks, and projects using triangle squares, you can visit allpeoplequilt.com.
So that was great. I loved getting all that super good information. Next week, we have all new guests. So please come back to American Patchwork and Quilting Radio. Come visit us at allpeoplequilt.com. And I'm your host, Pat Sloan. You can see me at patsloan.com.
Remember to visit allpeoplequilt.com for more information on topics from today's show, as well as how-to videos, free printable patterns, and additional tips and techniques. Thanks for listening to American Patchwork and Quilting Radio.